You're listening to Trek FM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we look forward to seeing you there.
This is Steve Sansweet of Rancho Obi-Wan, and you're listening to the 602 Club.
There was a little bar in Mill Valley where all the Starfleet trainees used to go.
The 602 Club.
You know it.
I was there more times than I can remember.
For centuries, the gunslingers and knights sworn to protect us from the coming of the dark. Now I'm the only one left.
Roland Deschain comes from a sort of legacy of gunslingers who were put in place to protect the Dark Tower from the Man in Black. And Roland is the last in that line.
The Dark Tower is at the center of the universe. The tower protects our world from chaos and death. If it falls, hell will be unleashed.
The Man in Black, he's the evil in this battle of good versus evil.
He's like the devil, isn't he?
No, he's worse.
I need to bring down that tower.
You can't stop what's coming. Death always wins.
I'm sworn to defend the tower. I'll stop at nothing to protect it.
Roland is actually the only one that could bring me down.
Darkness is your weapon. Guns are mine.
When I started the Dark Tower, I really saw the Gunslinger as this kind of concentrated force. Dark Tower's always been really important to me. And to see the Gunslinger come to life in film with Idris Elba, it's really incredible.
Do they have guns and bullets in your world?
You're gonna like Earth a lot.
All right, let's go. I do not aim at my hand. I aim at my eye. I do not shoot with my hand. I shoot with my mind. I do not kill with my gun. I kill with my heart.
Welcome, everybody, to the 602 Club, coming at you from the mid-world world of... I don't remember what the mid-world world is called.
Keystone
anyway,
Earth.
Welcome
Keystone
to the
Earth.
602 Club. Well, oh yeah, we're coming from live from Keystone or not so live. Oh, man, I'm really screwing this up tonight. Keystone Earth, yes, where the 602 Club is just alive and hopping. Apparently, I've had too much to drink tonight. Ruby, no more. No more. No. No, thanks. No, no, this doesn't mean more. It means none. Okay. And we're going to be talking about the Dark Tower tonight, which has finally been released after being in development hell for quite, well... a lot of years. And so I'm excited to dive into this one to see how it is with my two guests and back. I mean, 2 weeks in a row, Alice. I feel like this is a record right now.
It is a record right now. I am back. Yes.
Well, thank you so much for being back. Yeah, it's great to have you here. So, back as well. It's been a little while. But he volunteered, and he's bravely gone to the mid-world and back. It's Richard.
Hey, how you doing, Matt? Yeah, I found my comfy chair. It's still in the corner over there with my cot. So, yeah, glad to be back.
Yeah, I'm. Can you make your cot finally? Because Ruby keeps, getting really angry about that.
Yeah, yeah. You probably need to change the sheets or the nylon out of that, I'm sure.
I don't want to know. Guys,
I bet people sleeping on it. That's it.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know who's slept on it recently. People just keep coming in and crashing. So, oh, man. Well, you can find us all over the place. Trek FM is a feature provider there on iTunes. And while you're checking us out, hit us up with a star rating and review for the 602 Club. It definitely helps people find the show. And really appreciate everybody who's already done that. And we have so many other shows there for you. I mean, just a plethora of shows, I would say. And so make sure you check those out as well. You can find us on Twitter at Trek FM. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. All the hosts here tonight are actually a part of our listeners-only discussion group, the Babel Conference, which you can find on Facebook. You can type Babel into the search field on Facebook, or if you're on the website at trek.fm, click discussion on the mini bar, and that'll bring you right in to the listeners only discussion group. And last but not least, if you would like to leave us a voicemail, which I love getting those, it's been a long time, speakpipe.com/trekfm. You can do that. And you can also email us. Go over to trek.fm/contact, choose a show, choose the 602 Club. And I love hearing from people that way. It really makes my day. So make sure you do that. And you can tell us what you thought of the show or the movie that we're talking about, or, you know, maybe something that you'd love to hear us talk about. We'd love to have that kind of reach out from you guys. I really appreciate when those come in. Now, I mentioned that we're going to be talking about The Dark Tower, which is based off Stephen King's series that started way back in 1982 with a book called The Gunslinger. And the latest book released in that series was in 2012. And so I really wanted to ask both of you, Alice, I'm really interested to hear, what's your history with Stephen King? Have you ever read any of the series? And, you know, what were you thinking? Where was your mindset with all of that coming into this movie, The Dark Tower?
I had never heard of it. And I have not read I know people are going to gasp and some people might even faint, but I have never read a single Stephen King novel in my life. And I think that's primarily because he's known as a horror author and I don't enjoy horror for the most part. And I know he's written other things and he's, you know, very well respected and yada, yada, yada. But I have never read a single one of his books. So I certainly, of the books of his that people talk about, this doesn't seem to be one of them, because I've never heard anyone of my friends who like horror even talk about this book, or even my friends who like science fiction have talked about this book. So I was going in like completely blind.
What about you, Richard?
I'm in the same boat as her. But I mean, I've actually read two books of Stephen King's, and that was Cujo and It, and that's really it. But I mean, that wasn't on purpose either.
Man, you're a poet and you didn't even know it.
I know.
It's an oldie but a goodie.
It is. But like, you know, I've heard of this book, but I never had the chance to read it, and I knew nothing about what was going on, really. I mean, I had a gist of the story, but that was really it. I mean, from what I heard from everyone else.
It is funny because, you know, I worked at Barnes & Noble for quite a few years while I was in grad school and then afterwards. And so I was aware of this series. You know, I would see it, you know, in the fantasy genre area. You know, I'm aware of Stephen King, obviously. He's a very famous author. It's always a big deal in the book community when something by him comes out. But this isn't just wasn't something that I had read. And I think a little bit like you, Alice, I was in that same mindset. Oh, if it's Stephen King, it's probably in this horror genre. But really, what's so interesting about that, and this to me is this is much more akin to something like Lord of the Rings than it has anything to do with, you know, horror. And in fact, that was, from what I understand, kind of his idea was he wanted to create his own, like, expansive world, and his idea was to use the Old West as kind of a basis for that. And so, because, you know, like Tolkien, you know, kind of this mythological mythology for Britain, this is, you know, the Old West is basically kind of what we think of as our mythology, you know, in the United States. And so his goal was to, from what I understand, and obviously I've only read the very first book in the series, was to kind of do something in that ilk. And so, it, you know, when I heard that and I saw the trailer coming out, you know, I thought, wow, this looks actually pretty good. Like, I want to actually check out this series now, because that idea of, like, you know, this gunslinger and all that kind of, that intrigued me, because it kind of hit that, I don't know, Lord of the Rings funny bone that I have, you know, when something feels similar to that, or feels like it might kind of be something like that. I'm like, oh, I'll check that out, you know? So that's kind of where I came into this. And I read the first book in the series, and it's called The Gunslinger. And I have to say, it wasn't probably the best primer because I didn't really love it. I didn't like the structure of it. It's kind of back and forth with its structure. Like somebody will be telling a story, and you kind of get lost in the fact, like, where am I in this story? Like, oh yeah, somebody's telling this story, and I just didn't really enjoy the structure or the writing of it. But the premise was interesting. And so it could get better if I can continue on with the other seven books. I'm not sure. So that's kind of where I, you know, fell in the whole thing. I guess I kind of want to jump off of that. And this isn't on the outline, you guys. So sorry for throwing you off. But what were your first impressions of the movie? Like just kind of walking out. What were some of the things that went through your head?
So before I went to go see this movie, you know, seeing all the trailers and everything, I got really excited about seeing this movie. It looked really good. I'm a big fan of like the old West as well, and I was expected. I guess the mental image I was thinking of is that I thought I was going to go see Young Guns like 3. I really was thinking this is going to be great. There's lots of shooting, this and that, shooting demons and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, that's not what I got. And I was kind of disappointed when I got out of it. There were a couple times. I actually pulled out my phone, and I don't usually do that in movies at all. And there was a lot of dry spots, and I think the setup of the movie was off. I don't know. I just felt bored in some parts of it. Like it went too far into explaining something, like explain basically the world. How, like, you know, was it nine realms or something like that? Is that what it was? Nine worlds? Something like that?
That makes it sound like Isidril and Asgard. I don't remember. I can't remember how. I think there are, basically, from what I remember and what you're describing is that, you know, inside, in the middle of all of the universes is the tower.
Right.
I can't and remember if they said like how many universes like are in this, you know, being guarded by the tower. I don't remember.
Yeah. I mean, it's just,
so I have only seen the movie once. So
it, so did I. And we saw right when it came out, and I was quite a bit disappointed in the movie, to be quite honest. So yeah.
So I was going in, as I mentioned previously, completely blind and not having known this history about him wanting to do a Tolkien-like world, I didn't get that at all. I mean, that's just, nope. That's not what I got at all. And I will agree that it was like this weird mix for me of oversplaining and undersplaining. Because when the movie started, I was like, what the frack is going on? I don't know who these people are. I don't know what's happening. It doesn't make any sense. Where, if we're going to compare it to Lord of the Rings, where is my Galadriel's explanation of the history that's come before? So I at least can have my footings. And I have to agree with Richard that I found myself straight up bored a lot of the time. Or sitting there going like, why do I care? I really had a hard time feeling emotionally attached to the young man in the story. In all the Matthew McConaughey's character, what's his name? Walter something? I think it's Walter something. Something very
yeah,
funny
Walter.
Like that. Walter.
The Man in Black.
The Man in Black. You know, the... none of the deaths that he causes in the film seem particularly impactful to any of the characters around. I know they're supposed to be and the actors are acting, but I couldn't feel what they were feeling. I don't know how to explain it. And usually I'm like the world's worst sympathetic crier. You know, if one person starts to shed a tear in a movie, I'm like bawling, you know, but I could not get emotionally attached to any of these characters.
I think my first reaction was, you know, I saw, and I don't read them, but, you know, I saw the aggregate on Rotten Tomatoes and it's bad. And so going into this movie, though, I also had some more familiarity with it. And so I kind of had some of what to expect. And I have a general knowledge, I guess, of the world and everything. And so I came out of it thinking, wow, that was not as bad as Rotten Tomatoes said it was. And I think I had a decent time in the movie, and it was interesting trying to figure out. I could tell, and I think this is the thing that both of you are saying. It's like you can, I think, legitimately tell that this comes from 8 books, and they're just kind of stitching together certain things, and it maybe never feels the cohesion that it needs to have as a story. And I think, Alice, you're right to point out, when you're going to plop somebody specifically into a different realm, you should probably explain the rules of that realm a little bit with a Galadriel-like, you know, explanation. And you had Dennis Haber, right, play Idris Elba's dad, Roland's dad. Like, why don't you have that wonderful voice narrate like 3 minutes of like the history of the gunslingers, so that, you know, you have an understanding of what's happening, why it's happening, and so you kind of are invested, you know, the moment that things go really bad for them. So I'm not where completely with you guys, like, that I think, like, I was bored at any point, because I think I was really interested to see where it was going to go. But I did come out thinking, like, I mean, you know, it's, I guess we're kind of giving it away, but it's kind of average movie, you know, like it doesn't do that thing that it needs to do, especially to kind of like launch a franchise like this, where it really is able to grab you with that first movie and kind of give you the full on, like, this is why you should love this.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think in the end we're all kind of saying the same thing. So, and it's too bad too, because knowing that Stephen King, you know, has these 8 books of this series and kind of what he wanted to do with it, I feel like you could have done something pretty cool. And I don't, you know, not being like somebody who's read the entire series and knows everything and knows where they pulled from and all that kind of stuff, I can tell that this probably isn't the best effort you can give it. So
when I see a film that I feel is highly average, I always think to myself, I wonder what's on the cutting room floor. You know, I wonder if there's material that was shot that in the editing fell away or not. You know, like I wonder. I always wonder sort of where it fell apart. You know, did the producers come in and slash it? Was it truly just not led well from the director's chair? Did it get fracked up in post? You know, like where did it all go wrong?
Yeah, I was actually thinking about it as Matt was actually talking, that maybe there was extra, like you were saying, like extra footage that maybe that whole explanation that we were wanting is deleted for some reason to make it an hour and a half. Because I mean, for some reason, it felt like a 3-hour movie to me, or at least to me it did, even though it was like an hour and a half. It just, I don't know. It's just the way they were explaining things just felt long. And to be quite honest, I mean, something like this, I mean, I guess Lord of the Rings did it perfectly when it came to like explaining their lore and the world and whatnot. This one, I feel like it needs to be a TV show, not a movie. I mean, to do that kind of explaining and whatnot, because I just think that you can't just jump in the middle of this whole entire world and not and not be be lost and be like, and then, you know, write it off as like one of those movies that are like, as they say, flavorless and colorless. But yeah, I mean, I really think they could have. I mean, it's an interesting story. Don't get me wrong. I did like what the contact was, but the way they presented it, I think it could have been rearranged and done a little bit differently. So
no, I absolutely love your idea, Richard. The way to fix this is that, and this is the strange thing about this. I know that their goal was to have movies and a TV show and to kind of go back and forth. And which is kind of a strange idea in the first place. But I absolutely agree with you. Like a Netflix, an AMC, somebody like that could do this show. And I think you could do it really well. And Westworld, heck, does Western stuff. So you could totally do this as a TV show. And I feel like we'd get what we're all asking for, which is our gunsplaining. We need somebody to gunsplain this movie to us so that like we understand why the, you know, the gunslingers are important, you know, and you know, where is the weight? And I think, you know, I kind of dive in a little bit into the characters. You know, I think Idris Elba is really the best part of the movie to me. I really liked him in this role. I thought everything that was good about the movie started with him. And it's too bad because, you know, Idris Elba is a great actor. And this could have been a fantastic franchise role for him. And I mean, you know, that scene where he's like hurt and he's like doing the, you know, apparently the gunslinger thing where he's trying to feel with his heart and put it to practice all that he's learned to be able to shoot the guy who's running away with the kid he's trying to protect. And like when he finally shoots him, like, this is a great moment, you know. And unfortunately, the movie's not full of moments like that. There's maybe one or two of them, and that was in the trailer.
And I didn't. I had a hard time feeling the gravitas of those scenes. I knew, because I know storytelling, that they were supposed to be important and to be impactful to me. But I had a hard, emotionally, I had a hard time feeling them. Much like the scene where he's teaching the kid the gunslinger's credo or whatever it is, and he finally shoots his can, you know, and, you know, the young boy is starting on the path of his journey and his training, you know, like all that stuff's supposed to be there, all that weight, as you say, I think it was a beautiful thing to say, all that weight just wasn't there for me. I was just like, oh, yeah, yeah. You know, the Padawan is learning his, you know, stuff he's supposed to, I mean, I was just, it just didn't get me. It didn't get me.
You know, and when that small tear, I want to say, whatever tear that that demon came through, that would have been awesome if they would have, like, spoilers for anyone that that's going to go see this movie. but, like, I mean, that would have been great to, like, seeing that he had some kind of, like, like a talent for shooting or something like that, like to pick up that gun and then start shooting, and like a gunslinger, you know. I figured that's what was gonna happen, but then he ran away, and I'm like, as soon as that happened, I was like, oh man, no. And then, you know, expecting this awesome battle between this demon and Idris, thank you. I just read it. So, you know, this I'm expecting like this big like gun battle between this demons, you know, shooting snot or something like that. I don't know.
shooting snot.
Or, you know, or something like that. And I figured it would be something like that, but it wasn't even that. It was like him running around, you know, missing this demon, going in this jungle gym, and it's like, oh, come on.
It was,
could have made that scene
Park.
A whole lot better.
Right?
There you go.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Jurassic Park, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, the thing that happened there with Idris, too, because that moment could have been really cool for him, part of it that lets it down is that the effects work is not very good there at all.
Mm.
And it looks like the live action Disney Beauty and the Beast type of CGI. It's bad. And then on top of that, there's just not enough for me to understand how this all works. to make it, to give it that weight, I guess, really, you know? I don't know. Take it away.
I was going to say, what's the, because I'm, if we're going to talk about, you know, gun-fu movies, right? If we're going to talk about movies where gunplay is like the thing, you've got, is it Wanted? The one with Angelina Jolie?
Wanted.
Is that it? Based?
Yeah, John Wick is really good with guns.
Well, but he's good with guns for reals. I'm talking about where there's some...
Well, yeah.
Right, some in Wanted.
Almost like magic, too.
Right,
yeah,
exactly. They can swing the bullet so they can go around the corner, I think, in that one. And in that movie, they do spend a lot of time explaining, you know, you understand, like, the, I don't know, whatever, the organization in why this is all happening. And the only other one I can think of is the one with Christian Bale. I'm not going to remember it. Somebody's going to have to help me, which is truly the gun-fu movie, but... In that you're so right, Matt, in saying that we needed to understand why gunslinging was such a big deal, because you get into him doing the credo and having these amazing skills, and you know he's supposed to do something awesome, but you're not really sure why. You know, there was a war, you think. I mean, like, it's just also vague. There wasn't any really concrete reason to sort of get behind these characters and root for them and understand what's going on.
Yeah. No, and I, again, it's a frustrating thing because, you know, I like what Idris is doing, and I feel like he's selling the fact that I should care about the character that and what he's doing. And some of the stuff he gets to do is pretty cool. I mean... There are some of those gunslinging moments that I really did enjoy. I think at the end of the movie when he's just taking out all of those guys, and it's really cool, and he's reloading fast. I mean, just as an action sequence, that was fun. Like, I didn't need, you know, I don't need the context of the movie to enjoy what's happening there. But it's just frustrating that he doesn't get to have the whole thing really connect for him. And it's really, I don't think it's his fault. You know, I think you guys called out beforehand. I mean, this movie's an hour and a half, and it feels like this should be at least a 2-hour movie. And that allows you more of the importance of diving deep into the world in a way in which draws the audience in. And you need that because you also need that for the character motivations and kind of really... truly understanding. And I felt like too much was left for the audience to infer and not enough shown. And in a movie, you have to show, not tell. And then a lot of times they would just kind of tell you things as well. They wouldn't completely show it to you. And so I think when you're just making an audience infer things and then you're just kind of telling them a little bit, you're not doing your audience a ton of favors. And that's kind of, again, that's frustrating. And it's got to be frustrating, I would think, as an actor. Like Idris Elba, who, I mean, the guy's good stuff. I mean, really good stuff.
Or like she was saying, maybe he did do that, and it's on the editing floor right now.
Yeah. So, Matthew McConaughey, you know, all right, all right, all right. What'd y'all think?
Oh, my lordy. Oh, could we just button that shirt up, please?
What do you mean? So sexy.
Oh, God. We talk a lot about having a quote unquote a good villain, meaning there's a meaty villain, a villain that's not a stereotype or common or whatever. And there was very little, if anything, that I liked about Matthew McConaughey's character for one, and performance for two. You know, he was he's kind of like a slimy used car salesman with the ability to kill with words, you know, and I just, bleh, it didn't work for me at all.
So he's the devil.
Basically, mean. Yes. in that stereotype. Yes. that sexy is always associated with evil. which isn't something I think it should be. But anyway, you're right. I mean, it's hilarious. Did you guys relate to that character at all?
Well, I didn't relate to him. He's the devil.
Me either.
Oh, come on. I know you guys have those sexy black shirts and you like to, I mean, look at you right. I can see you right now.
No, Matthew McConaughey is fantastic. It's funny because I just rewatched recently Interstellar. He's so good in that movie. He's so good in that movie. And I think, again, it, like Idris Elba, the material just lets him down. You know, he doesn't get a lot to work with. And so what he does is what he does. But I don't really think it comes down to him so much as just that everything that he is doing is unfortunately quite cliched. And that hurts him. I mean, there's any good actor can make something out of a role that's not there. But I guess what I'm saying is I feel like there's so little there for him that even Matthew McConaughey is just kind of phoning this one in and getting the paycheck.
I can't give him a pass.
I thought the same thing, actually.
Ugh, it's horrible.
I thought he was great. I thought he was great. He sold it to me as, the man in black. I mean, he's creepy little dude. and he sold it to me. I mean, I really wish they would have showed, I guess, him being more ruthless. But, I mean, like you said, he's got to work with what he's got. And he's the one that sold it to him. And Idris were the two that sold it to me on this movie. And I absolutely love Matthew McConaughey's acting in almost everything. But this one, I mean, this is definitely right there in the middle on some of his work. So, yeah.
I'm sorry, I cannot give him a pass on this one. And I think the problem for me was he didn't need to be more of an evil dude. I mean, killing people for fun, with work, whatever. It's that the impact of what he was doing didn't come off as being horrible. You know, he does these horrible things and people die, and instantly people die. And sure, it sucks, but you don't feel that it sucks. People aren't truly horrified, Like, there's no impact of those deaths. So his horribleness is, he's being demasculated in his horribleness.
Well, and I think you're hitting on something that is kind of important in the sense that the only death that I felt an impact was the kid's mom. I thought that him reacting to his mom's death was well done. And the reaction to that and the reaction he has with, Roland there as well, I thought that was good. But I agree with you in the sense that, like, when he's killing people or maiming people basically in front of his own people, there isn't that Vader effect, right? Where Vader chokes somebody and everybody on the bridge is like, OS, we're all about to die. Like, everybody is shaking in their boots. And that, like you're saying, Alice, it has that effect, on everyone around them, what's happening. And so I completely agree with you that for the most part, what he's doing doesn't have enough of an impact on screen, except for maybe once. And so I don't, he's bad, but like there isn't that feeling of like, how bad this guy is, he's like a mediocre devil.
Second,
is there a certain level?
Maybe he needs to go to Satan school for a little longer or something. I don't know.
He's the devil in purgatory. He hasn't made it to the big league.
Yeah, I mean, like, anyway. What did you guys think about the kid Tom Taylor is Jake Chambers, who's kind of the person this movie... even though I think that for the trailers, you think Idris Elba is going to be your main character. But really, I think the way the story is set up, he's kind of your character for which everything else is seen for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's lost as just as we are when we're watching this movie. I would rather, like I said before, I would love to have seen him have some kind of ability beyond, I guess, psychic abilities, or something else that...
What? You weren't totally sold by The Shine?
Shine.
No, it wasn't shiny enough.
And I was like, The Shining or just The Shine? Shiny. I don't understand. Come and
Shining was a
us.
Good movie. But like, I just wish that he had more than that. More, it's just something beyond, you know, I guess as a good drawler and I guess a dreamer and psychic ability. And I maybe that's the next movie. I don't know, you know, but
oh,
like,
there's not going to be a next movie.
I really think, well, maybe we'll see. I don't know. maybe they will. Maybe they will. I don't know. Maybe the TV show just said, nope. But like, yeah, I really wished he'd have another ability of some sort. Or he realizes that new ability as, you know, throughout the whole entire movie. That would have been awesome, but sadly, no. Mm-mm.
Yeah, for me, there are so many themes in this, from a story perspective, that have been done, right? I mean, that old adage, there are only 7 stories, you know, and they just get retold over and over and over again. And that being said... when you retell it, you gotta do a good job. You know, you can't just throw the same old story up on the board, and if you're not really doing interesting things with it or giving your best performance or whatever, it's just not gonna work. And I think the young man does a perfectly fine job. But it, you know, again, what do we have? We have the chosen one. We have the boy who's the chosen one who's going to go off and find it. I mean, I've seen this story so many times, and there wasn't anything unique or special about this particular retelling of that story that wowed me. So yeah, I mean, but in terms of the young man's performance, I mean, I thought like everything else in the movie, he did just an average job.
I think, you know, for the most part, he was good. You know, a child actor does have the opportunity, if you pick the wrong one, to, I think, destroy a movie. And he definitely doesn't do that. I think he does a very good job in a movie that doesn't really even give, even though he's the main character, a ton of really dynamic stuff to do. And that's sad, you know, because he seemed to be a decent actor as a kid, and he probably could have done a lot more. I just don't think that, again, the material even really serves him, kind of this main character, all that well, and that is too bad, because I wanted to like him, and there were parts of the movie where I'm definitely going along with him and his story. It just felt wanting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like you're saying, Alice, it just feels wanting. You feel like there should be something more, and there just never is completely. And that is frustrating. And, you know, one of the things that was, Alice, you know, I'm going to pull out some stuff, some themes. But one of the things I did kind of think was interesting, and I would have liked to really see more of, and I think this is where the whole world building aspect comes in, is that whole idea of forgotten father. And they have that whole creed, you know, I do not aim with your hand. You know, he who aims with his hand forgets the face of his father. And this thing keeps getting repeated. And I was trying to figure out, like, what does that mean in the story? Like, because they never explain it to you other than it's this creed of the gunslinger. But I thought it was interesting because it kind of seemed, at least to me, how I started to read it was just almost the idea, you forget the face of your father. It kind of is this idea of kind of forgetting what our parents have taught us, you know, and that parents are the ones that are most responsible in a child's life of, you know, teaching them what's right and wrong. And it, you know, it made me think of the proverb, you know, if you train up a child the way he will go, he will not, when he's old, he won't depart from it. And so really... you know, forgetting the face of your father is forgetting the values and morals and the principles to which your parents instill in you, because they know those are the ones that life is best lived by. But I really just wanted this theme to be like more explained, you know, like because it seemed like a really big deal, but it I don't feel like they ever really move it forward. Does that make sense to anyone?
Yes. The fact that they didn't move it forward. Yes, that's very true. No, I mean, I can see, you know, and if taking it that way, you know, the when they try and make the funny with it when they're in the modern world in Keystone Earth and it just all but, you know, says it to the young ladies who are dressed perhaps a little bit provocatively. And he says, "You've forgotten the face of your father." And that to me sort of backs up sort of what you're saying in terms of this morality piece. You know, if only someone would have told Matthew McConaughey that, we would have been better. But anyway, no, I can totally see where you're coming from.
Cover it up, Matthew. Cover it up. That's what Alice is
That's
saying.
Right.
Well, he definitely dishonors his father. He's not evil enough, so that's for sure.
Oh, and what about those two characters? I mean, there's so much in this movie where I just was like, who are these people and why do I care? The weird rat woman character where he says something to her about how, oh, put on a pretty face and you'll, you know, be liked or whatever. God, there was so much weird misogyny in this movie. And then the very human boy-like character that's in that same, who's running the machinery. I was like, who is that dude? And why does he seem to be a main character? Because I don't know who the hell he is and I don't really care about him.
Again, it was one of those things where there's so much about the movie you're left to kind of like infer or you just don't know. And it is frustrating because I also thought of this whole idea, like the one thing that we are told at the beginning of the movie is that there is a tower that guards the universe and it holds evil from coming from outside the universe in. And letting all these demons and stuff that exist, right? And the mind of a child can bring this down. Okay. I'm tracking with you so far. And it brought up a theme to me that I thought was kind of interesting, which is it reminded me of the, like, what we've, and it kind of tied in with something that Tomorrowland does, which is, you know, what we feed our children. And their minds can either destroy the world or it can save it. And again, it's like this cool theme that's just sitting there waiting for somebody to do something with it. And like nobody does really anything with it. It just drove me crazy because like I think that's a really important theme in a world that lives in an information overload, you know. But I don't know. It really frustrated me. Really frustrated me.
All right. So now let's put.
I don't know. Did either of you see that in the movie at all? Or
no.
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 Okay. No. I understand. Again, I was frustrated that it wasn't there enough. So.
I don't know. So many questions just went through my head. But like, it's like, okay, I understand the gunslingers protect the tower or whatnot and fight the demons and evil and that's outside the universe that's trying to come in. But like, you would think that, I guess I'm mixing Lord of the Rings with it. You would think a mage of like a child or something like that is protecting it too or something like that. I mean,
I get what you're saying.
It feels
yeah.
like there's no one there at the tower anyway when it gets hit. I mean, it looks like a big, like,
phallus.
It
looks like a huge, like, massive. I mean, it's not even as cool as any of the towers you saw in Lord of the Rings.
Right.
Like,
right. The structure. I mean, obviously, it's not as tall. There's a national monument over it. Wyoming. I can't remember what it's called.
Devil's Tower.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Devil's Tower.
It's amazing.
Yes.
Looking. Yeah.
I've been there before, but I just couldn't remember what it was. But like, yeah, that's what it reminded me of. And it was like, there's not much to it. It doesn't look like anyone's home either.
Yeah. Apparently nobody lives in the tower, yeah. But the one theme that I did think was in the movie enough and it was interesting was, is revenge enough? And kind of almost like the Lord of the Rings elves, where Galadriel talks about fighting the long defeat, you know, Roland has given up this fight. He's lost everybody. All he cares about is revenge. And the seer in the city that they go to, Ara, tells him, isn't that why we're losing? Because everybody stopped fighting. And it really, it did bring to mind, in the only thing that really kind of plays out in this movie is that, a little bit as a theme, is that why we fight is as important, and it impacts how we fight. And that revenge isn't enough to try and save the world with. And I thought that that was relatively interesting, because especially with what the seer comes at him with, it's like, we're losing because everybody just stopped doing anything. Like, it's like people stopped caring. You know, we just put our heads in the sand, and in the world in which we live, I was like, okay, that's pretty resonant. Again, they could have played it out a little bit more, but I thought, wow, that's something that at least has something good to say, I think.
You're working so hard, Matt, and I so love you for it.
I am working really hard. I'm working really hard. I'm trying. I'm really trying.
Here's a tip. Yeah.
Thank you. I'll take that, Richard. All right. Yeah. Digital tips. Bitcoin. All right. Can't get enough.
It's my response is just that
I think the first.
For me, it's,
here's another one.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, take that one too.
For me, it falls back to that same thing where, is revenge worth it? Is a story that I've seen, I've read it in a ton of books, I've seen it in a ton of movies, and how this particular film presented that story, again, it just wasn't enough. It wasn't enough. It wasn't strong enough. It wasn't different enough. It wasn't passionate enough. It just, was a C-minus effort.
It wasn't enough. Yeah. No, and I absolutely 100% agree with you. And that's the disappointing thing is that, and I guess it, let's just hop to our ratings. I think it's time. I'm going to go first. I don't usually go first, but I'm going to go first. I think that that's the funny thing about this movie. And Richard, you said it earlier, this movie has some really interesting premises, right? And obviously, if this is a 8-book series by Stephen King, and it's loved the world over by people around the world, there's something to it. And I don't feel like that the filmmakers were able to pull together enough of that to help us as novices understand what it is that people love about this. Now, there's some hints in there, but it's just not enough to make me a fan. And I say that because if you, and I think it's fair to go to the Lord of the Rings films and to know that those movies made a ton of people Lord of the Rings fans who then went and read the books afterwards. The same thing had happened with the Harry Potter movies. And so, if a movie is based on a book and the movie is good enough, it drives people to the source material and they keep going with it. And the movies then continue in the series and they get more and more, positive. More and more people go to them, they get more and more money. And you see that happening with the best franchises. And what happens here is they are not able to capture enough of the spirit of the Dark Tower universe that allows me to feel like, okay, I get enough in this world. This is a great first movie. And now I want to go to the next movie. Because I don't really care if there's a next movie at this point, and that's disappointing. And I think part of the problem, and I'm going to be a little long-winded here, so just bear with me. We talked about the Planet of the Apes trilogy that they just completed, the Caesar story. In each one of those movies, and something that Brandon Shamatul and I really drove home is that each one of those movies just made the best darn movie possible each time without thinking about the sequel. You just put it all out there in your first movie and and I feel like this could have been something that if you just put everything that would make a fantastic, brilliant story in one movie and you never needed anything else, that you do that. And they don't do that here. And I think it really shows that it's just kind of a mediocre effort to start a franchise that doesn't leave you wanting more of this franchise, which will probably end with one film. And most likely, it'll probably just end up being a TV show, which maybe it should have just been in the first place. Maybe that's the better form of telling this story. So I'm going to be generous. I'm going to say that this is 3 out of 5 stars. But that is being very generous. And part of that is because I did like Idris Elba in the movie. And there were some really cool scenes. But on a whole, I can't, like, I wouldn't recommend you then take my 3-star rating and go pay $12 to go see it in the movie theater. No. You know, it'll come up on Netflix. Watch it then. You know, maybe Mystery Science Theater 3000 it with your friends. You know, so, yeah. What about you, Alice?
I give it 2 out of 5. I really wish I would have gone to see Atomic Blonde.
That's out. Oh,
it is out. Yeah,
it was 7:30 Atomic Blonde or 7:40 Dark Tower, and I really wish I would have gone to see the Atomic Blonde at 7:30.
I'm sorry, Alice. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, I get it. I get it. You don't want to come back. It's fine, Richard. What about you?
I really love the trailers. I'll give them that. I mean, they definitely showed the best parts of the whole movie. Idris Elba and Dennis Haysbert was what sold it to me, because I absolutely can't get enough of Dennis Haysbert, because I'm a huge fan of everything he does, especially when it deals with the military. And same thing with Idris. I'm going to give it 3 long Colt 45s with 2 bullets in it. So 3.2. Even though there's not 10 bullets in it, but that's okay.
There you go. I love it. Man, getting
technical.
Now, as everybody knows, and I think can attest, I work really hard to be as positive as we can about women and try to find the best that we could. And I definitely think that we did as positive a job as we could in this film, and that just happens sometimes. Films just don't come together, and I think this is one of them, and you know, that's just the way it is. But I really appreciate everybody listening. I hope you had a good time. We had a good time just laughing about things, and sometimes that's fun. So thanks for joining us here on the 602 Club. This is a big network, and I really want to thank associate producers that I have through Patreon, Ken Tripp and Davis Grayson. Great guys, and they have been supporting the show for a long time, and they also support the network, too. This is a huge network, Trek FM, and it really does cost a lot to bring this to you each and every week. And there really is absolutely no way that we as the hosts can make that happen each and every week by ourselves. And so Patreon is a way for you to support the network. Every little bit helps. It's just a little bit a month can go a long way for us. And so if you appreciate what we do here on Trek FM, all the shows, they're ad-free, go over to patreon.com/trekfm. You can see how you can be part of our team and help bring all of these shows to you. We have different contribution levels that you can give at. And each one of those levels has different perks that come with it, because we love giving back to you. So go again to patreon.com/trekfm and see how you can be part of our team and make sure that all the great content keeps coming to you. Now, Richard, before you leave your six-shooter here on the table, where can everybody find you here on the network and online?
Well, when I'm not on the targeting range, I'm actually on Facebook. I pop in here and there on the Babel Conference. My Twitter handle is xransom, and you can also hear me here on Trek FM on Earl Grey, where we talk nothing but the Next Generation with Amy Nelson and Justin Ozer.
And Alice, thanks for stopping by the Midworld. And where can everybody find you if they want to catch up about movies or anything else that you're up to?
Well, as with Richard, I too bop over to the Babel Conference to chat about all sorts of crazy things. And you can find me on the internets. Just search ALCBKR.
And you could find me on the Twitter at MattRushing02. And I'm also on Instagram with that same moniker now. So both places find me in the same name. I'm here on the network doing The Orb with Chris Jones, talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I am on the Nerd Party Network with John Mills, talking about Star Wars with Aggressive Negotiations. We just have an absolute blast with that show. It's so much fun each week diving into something new about the Star Wars universe. Talking through each and every chapter of the Harry Potter series with Drea Kaufman on Owl Post. That is a joy to do. I hope that you will check that out. And then last but not least, the last show that I am doing is called Cinema Stories, and that is where we look at film through the lens of faith, and I hope you will check that out. You can find all of those shows on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And thank you so much for joining us, and y'all come back now to hear. Thank you.